Okay, this brief sugya is, first of all, much longer than it looks. Big things come in small packages. And contains a lot within it. And really, there's really two distinct sugyas completely, even setting aside how many different details you could talk about. There's really two different sugyas here in these brief lines. What am I talking about? Well, if you wanted to break this down into categories, there are at least two different mega issues here, or macro issues here. Right? You have the issue of mechila, right? Well, I mean, that is also, you're right, it's a big issue, but that is kind of tucked in within just the Mekadesh B'milveh issue. Right? Now, the real sugi of Mekadesh B'milveh is really later, really comes in much more detail later. You had a chance, I put that actually before our Gemara, just to give you a sense, because it's a little more detailed. And I had to make a little bit of a triage decision as far as the Mar Mekomos, because the truth is, the sugya on Mem Zayin really goes on for about a block, right, for about a whole daf, in terms of going back and forth about these milveh issues. But if I put that first, then you'd never get to our Gemara today, especially during the short Seder. So I just gave you the first few lines of this Gemara to look at, which give us a little bit of a sense of what we're talking about. And then brought you back to our Gemara. But basically, there's much more detail, and if you have extra time tomorrow, you want to take some time to look at the Gemara further on Mem Zayin, you'll see the discussion really continues. So first you have Mekadesh B'milveh, and then you have really a whole other topic, which is also Halva related, but is a whole other sugya. And what's that? Sugya of ribbis. And what is prohibited to do because of ribbis. And that's something, God willing, we'll get to a little bit more tomorrow. But really, we could bifurcate the sugya and talk about the issue of Mekadesh B'milveh first, and then get to the issues of ribbis. There's really a third ribbis B'kiddushin issue, which was not really addressed by the Gemara, but just so you should be aware of it once the Gemara is talking about ribbis, and maybe that I'll mention in a second after we look at the Gemara together. Okay, so let's do that first. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Hamakadesh B'milveh, Eina Mekudeshes. So somebody who attempts to be Mekadesh with alone, whatever that means, we'll have to figure out in a second what that means, no good. But the Hanas Milveh, apparently that means something else, so that is good. But that you're not allowed to do. It would be an effective kiddushin, but it is prohibited. But also la'asoskein mipnei haramas ribbis, and it is prohibited to do that because of what?
Haramas
ribbis. Right. So not ribbis apparently, but haramas ribbis. So that's an important distinction. We'll have to get into that. I don't know how familiar you are with Hilchas Ribbis if you've been holding in Daf Yomi, so it's just a very recent Daf Yomi, the sugyas of Ribbis. But one thing you'll see is that Ribbis is a very complex topic that has a number of levels to it. There is Ribbis min haTorah, which we call Ribbis Kitzutza, meaning that that is Ribbis that is set up and designated from the beginning that that's going to be the deal. I lend you $10, you have to pay me back $11. That's ribbis min haTorah. And there are many forms of ribbis drabanan. There's ribbis drabanan as a general grouping, where in general, if it's not ketsutza, it's already not min haTorah, if it wasn't a deal that was set up at the beginning. Although we'll say a little bit more about that as we see this tomorrow, and not being daraisa doesn't mean it's mutter, because there are many forms of drabanans. With the drabanans, it breaks down into levels. So this phrase, the haramis ribbis, is going to be significant, that it's not ribbis outright, but it's some kind of prohibited ribbis. So, hai hanas milveh hechidomi. So what in the world are we talking about when we say hanas milveh? No?
So if you would do it with with ribbis, would that be Pitzavah Be'avir?
Oh, so that's what I was saying about the third sugya, so I'll talk about that in a second. So, okay, so hai hanas mova hechidami. So how exactly do you have hanas mova? Ilema da zakfa da amrla arba b'chamisha. If you say, okay, here's the story, so I lent you four, you owe me five. So take that fifth and use that as your kes of kedushin. Haribis mahalisu. That is overt ribis. What do you mean? That's complete ribis. So, va'od, and we just said haramis ribis. Va'od, hainu milveh. And also, that itself is the same as milveh, which is also going to be an instructive line. In other words, it would have both issues. We have said there's two issues that are really separate issues in our short Gemara, the issue of milveh in general and the ribis issues. So the Gemara clues us in to what both of these mean by saying if you do it this way, you would trip over both issues. So apparently, no, that's not what we're talking about. So it's not that you are using the extra money for Kesef Kedushin, but you are extending the time. Now, I intentionally have not yet looked at Rashi or anyone else, because you do have a number of disputed points as to how to interpret what's going on here. But just to mention for a second, because it's Noah's question, it's really a whole other topic, but it's not one that's really going to be explicitly addressed here, so we'll just take a few minutes to discuss. There is a fascinating question about how to relate to the prohibition of ribbis. That, you know, the Torah tells us you're not allowed to collect ribbis, one's not allowed to charge interest on a loan. And that, on the surface, sounds like a mitzvah b'radim l'chaveru. It sounds like there's something wrong, maybe there's something exploitative, about telling somebody who needs a loan that you're not going to give him a loan unless he agrees to pay more. So on the surface, that's how the sugya comes across. And this also parallels the fact that we find interest-taking not just prohibited in Judaism, but prohibited in other religions as well, and sometimes prohibited by law, when it's called usury. Usury, if you're familiar with that word, it's a word which used to mean interest by itself, but that language, that usage is considered archaic nowadays. When the word is used today, so it's meant to signify what's called predatory lending. Meaning that you are lending with the intent of exploiting the person who needs the help. So you're saying, okay, you're in a bad situation, I can help you out today, and tomorrow you're going to pay for it dearly. So there are laws against that. The law regulates how much interest you can charge, in that you're not allowed to exploit people in situations of great need who feel like they have no choice but to commit to you. So on the surface, okay, the Torah prohibits ribbis. Seems like that's essentially what's going on. The Torah, it should be noted, uses actually two words for interest. Ribbis, as a construct, is a Talmudic word. In the Torah, you don't have the word ribbis exactly. You have it a little bit differently. You have two different words in the Torah for interest. And what are those words? You have neshech. And
tarbis,
right. So tarbis is like ribbis, but it's a different form. So that perhaps suggests that there's different connotations there. What does neshech mean literally?
To bite.
To bite, exactly. So the idea that ribbis is hurting the borrower is contained in the language of neshech. And that's how Sefer Achino understands it, that you're basically biting into the guy who needs help, and that's why it's problematic. While the word tarbis, and ribbis is a form of that, that's less judgmental, even though it's still prohibited, but tarbis just means an increase, to add more. So that doesn't necessarily connote that you are preying on somebody. So that's where it gets interesting. That even though the notion of predatory lending exists in other religions and in secular law, when it comes to ribbis, ribbis has a lot of things that are unusual about it. So among the unusual dinim that you would not have guessed, you wouldn't expect in ribbis, you know what I'm talking about, what's a little bit surprising about the laws of ribbis in the Torah?
You only apply to Jews.
That's interesting, right? Because if you want to say that it's really exploitative, so then it should be a moral principle should apply to anyone. That's definitely an interesting thing. I was up first. Okay, Jacob.
There's a punishment also on both the borrower and lender.
Oh, right. Or even without getting to punishment, but the prohibition to the borrower and the lender is very unusual, right? If I'm exploiting you, so I'm the bad guy. So why are you in trouble? John, is that what you wanted to? Okay, go for it.
It had to do with the fact that it's only considered ribbis if it, you know, fulfills certain, at least the Risa fulfills certain, you know, unique, if it's sent and if it's, you know, time.
Right, the focus on tzitza is right. Interesting. Right, so just to take a second to talk about this. And again, we're doing things a little bit backwards, but just so we can have a little bit of context for this. So the idea of tzitza is interesting, right? Why should that matter? If I already asked you a question, okay, let me give you a hypothetical. Let's say I were to say that Akiva comes and asks me for a loan of $100. Okay, this is case A. He asks me for $100. I say, I'll lend you $100, but you got to pay back $110. Okay? That's okay with you? Boom, that was a trap. That shouldn't be okay. Okay, but theoretically, he pretends that it's okay with him, right? So you say it's okay. Tomorrow, you come to pay me back $100. Right? So you come with $100, and then you're about to reach into your other pocket, your ribbis pocket, where you have the extra $10. I say, it's okay, forget it. I don't need the ribbis. Just give me the $100. Okay? I don't take the ribbis. So I charge the ribbis initially, that's the deal, but I don't actually take it. So that's case A. Now, let's say case B. You ask me for $100. I say, sure, $100, take it, no problem. Tomorrow, you come with your $100, and you say, okay, we're all square. I say, wait a minute. I did you a favor here. I think it would be appropriate that I should get a little extra. So I think I'd like $110. Now, you don't really want to give me $110, but you know, it's awkward now, and you're hoping that... he'll be there for you later, and I'm going to give you grades and stuff. So, yeah, you know, okay, whatever, fine. Okay, you give me the extra 10. That's case B. All right, so there, I didn't establish it Meirosh, but I did take it. Alpi din Torah. Which case is worse? Which case a greater violation of Torah law? Okay, so Morty says the first one.
Either they're both equal.
Okay, Jonah says they're both equal. So I got one, A is worse, one equal.
A.
What?
A.
A, okay, so who votes with Morty? Okay, you got a couple
of votes. Oh, they're definitely changing to the same.
That's right. You
okay, so Jonah's got, who votes with Jonah?
I'm trying to remember business law. I'm trying to remember business law right now.
Who votes that the second case is worse? It's interesting that none of you vote that way because intuitively, okay, you know, so you shouldn't be alone. So, I think one would have thought before coming on to the details of ribbis that case B sounds worse because, first of all, you actually took the guy's money, right? And you also didn't warn him in advance, so it's got two problems with it. In the first case, okay, so as a matter of policy, the way you do business, you always start off with the ribbis. But yeah, you didn't take it. Right? So, I mean, as the borrower, right, Akiva, what situation would you rather go through?
First.
You'd rather go through A, so B would be worse for you. So it's interesting, I guess you all have halachic minds. None of you voted for that one, which, as far as logic would indicate, would seem to be worse. You all either decided that A is worse, or that they're the same. But the truth is, A is indeed the worst one. Sorry, yeah. But sorry. Yes. So, but so A is worse. But that also highlights the truth is, but Jonah, you still get credit because it highlights not extra credit because that would be ribbis maybe, but it highlights what you brought up before, the fact that there's something quirky here, that the tzitzah is such a big deal that it's worse the fact that it's tzitza, that's what makes it daraisa, and therefore it's worse to do that, even if I don't take the money in the end, than it is to actually take the money if it wasn't katzitz from the beginning. That's such a counterintuitive thought. So what is unique about ribbis? And this is, by the way, something clearly we could talk about for many, many hours. I'm trying to kind of rush a quick introduction to ribbis in a very short slot, so you'll forgive. But you know, I won't be Makadosh anybody with the forgiving, but the idea being that we see some quirks here, right? We see that, surprisingly, it only applies to Jews, and as if it was really a moral violation, we would think that it should apply to everyone. We see that the victim, so to speak, whoever is the borrower you think is the victim, has the same prohibition. The prohibition applies to him also. Very unusual kind of idea. And that we're so laser focused on tzitza as an issue that even when the person doesn't end up paying any money at all, that's worse because it was katzitz than somebody who does pay without it being katzitz at the beginning. And one other thing I'll throw, yeah?
What's the reason why tzitza is worse?
Well, that's what I want to explain. We're just laying out all the questions. But one other thing I want to explain here is that one other unusual, surprising halacha is that, okay, so if usury is a bad thing, so again, I mentioned usury changed usage, that usury used to be synonymous with ribbis in archaic usage, with interest. Now, legally, if you talk about usury, we have anti-usury laws, so that refers to a high rate of interest. Right? But when it comes to the Torah's prohibition of interest, it's not only if you're charging at a very exploitative rate, and it's that even if you're charging what the bank pays, you're trying to just think you don't want the guy to lose out when he would leave the money in the bank, he would get a certain amount more. So instead of that, he's asking you just to cover what he would get in the bank, a totally reasonable rate, still prohibited. So all of this comes to suggest that there's something unusual about ribbis. That ribbis, even though it involves money, it involves people, and it seems like if you had to put it somewhere, you would put it in Choshen Mishpat and Mitzvos B'Adam L'Chaveiro. Seems like it's actually not. All these details don't fit with B'Adam L'Chaveiro, making the victim also the criminal here, right? And we can't even figure out what the offense is if we're talking at low numbers and we're talking about things like that. And the idea that goes together with the fact that the victim is also the criminal, and a necessary correlate to that is that he's not allowed to be moichel. Right? That if the victim is screaming, listen, I want the loan badly, I'm happy to pay interest, it's in my interest, no pun intended, to pay the interest, it's worth it for me to get the loan, I'm paying the interest happily, I want nothing more than to be able to pay you interest, still, he's not allowed to do that. Right? So as a B'Adam L'Chaveiro, that is a very unusual dip. So there are those who suggest that despite outward appearances, ribbis is not a bin adam l'chaveiro. And is not a choshen mishpat tikedin. It's more of a yoredeya type of din. And you want to know what's a great proof that ribbis is more of a yoredeya type din than a choshen mishpat din?
It's in
yoredeya. But if you want to look it up, you can turn to all the choshen mishpat, you won't find it. But it is located in Yoredeya. Now, there could be other reasons why that is, the whole discussion, including the Torah came before the Shulchan Aruch, and the Torah put it there, and why that is, there's a lot to talk about. But it's certainly interesting. So, there could be two models to understand what ribbis is, if it's not a normal bin adam l'chaveiro. One is, you could say, that it's kind of an enhanced bin adam l'chaveiro. That, yes, it is a bin adam l'chaveiro, but it's not a moral principle, which we would assume should apply to non-Jews too. But rather, it's an enhanced interpersonal obligation that has to do with the unique nature of the Jewish family. The Avni Nezer, Helig HaSach HaChava Rebbe, has many tshuvas about ribbis, so many so that he has a separate title in his tshuvas for the section about ribbis, and it's called the Kuntres Bris Achim. So the idea of Bris Achim So bris, first of all, is an anagram for ribbis. It's the same letters moved around. But it reflects an idea which is found in the Rishonim, the Rashba, the Ramban, and others, that the notion of ribbis, sorry?
What's it called?
Bris Achim. Right, so bris achim is, the word bris is an anagram for ribbis. Right? Right, so ribbis bris. But it also is a theme that he's saying that the idea of ribbis is that it's a bond between the Jewish people. So yes, it's reasonable for me to charge a little bit of interest as a business deal. But you don't do that to your brother, supposedly. Now, you don't do that to somebody who you're family with. So it could be that the din of ribbis is to look at all of Jews like they're one family, and therefore it's a unique kind of enhancement of the mechavero. Now, the other way to say it is that maybe it's not an ad mechavero at all. And that maybe, essentially, it's an offense against the Ribono Shel Olam. And that the way I would formulate this is that Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I want you to do chesed. I want you to help people out. And that's what I'm asking you to do. And for you to say, well, okay, God, I'll do that, but I want to be guaranteed that I'm covered, not in any fancy way, just like in the bank. I want a contract that says that I will not make any less money than I will had I left this money in a bank with a low rate of interest. So that, it's not harmful to the borrower. You're not hurting the borrower. He's getting a good deal. But it's an offense against God. That God said, I want you to do chesed on my terms. And you're saying, no, I'm only going to do it if you guarantee. And this, by the way, could explain ribbis and parashat Bahar. Ribbis comes up 3 times in the Torah. But in Bahar, it's there together with Shemitah. And perhaps it has a little bit of a correlation to Shemitah. You know, Chazal say Shemitah is about Amunah. So imagine if you would make a deal with the rabbi and say, listen, I'll observe Shemitah, but the rabbis have to pay me if I found that I'm losing any money. So that's not going to really display so much Amunah. So too, if you say, okay, God, I'll take care of people, but you have to make sure I'm covered with a guarantee. So if that's the idea, then you could understand, first of all, why it's not up to the borrower to be mochel, because it's not between you and him. And you can understand also why with such a focus on the tzitzit. Because what's offensive here? What's offensive is the deal. It's not that you take the other guy's money. Maybe it's reasonable to take the other guy's money. If it's unreasonable, that's an additional avera. But if you're taking a reasonable rate of interest, so you're not hurting that guy. So the fact that you took his money is not the avera. It's the fact that you made the deal, that you said, I'm only going to lend you if you agree to this premise. That's the aver. So if I end up not taking it, like in case A, I end up not taking the money in the end, well, that's very nice for Akiva that I didn't actually take the money. But I did the aver yesterday when I said, I'm not going to lend you unless you do this. So that suggests that ribbis really is not a ben adam l'chavero, and it is an avera against God. Now there's an additional mitzvah, it's a separate mitzvah in the Torah, that if you take ribbis, you have to return it. So that, you could also ask the question, so why do I have to return the ribbis? Do I return the ribbis basically because I exploited you and took your money, shalom and hadin? Or is it a separate din? It's a mitzvah that I have to just give back the ribbis to correlate to the prohibition of taking ribbis in the first place. So that is the whole discussion. There's a lot, again, I'm kind of rushing through a lot in a very short period of time just to give you a little bit of a background in ribbis. But the ramification of all of this is that if you say ribbis is not a actual kosher mishpah type of transgression. So there is a surprising conclusion that some of the early achronim came to. And there's discussion about this, like in the Stipe, I think the Stipe in Kedushin has a discussion about this. And there's Mishnah Melech like this, others who have this conclusion, that basically ribbis is a chov, the hatorah asrasa. Meaning that if I steal money from you, so we know that's illegitimate money, I stole it. But if I say to you, I'm lending you $100 and you have to pay me back $110, so what is that extra $10? Is that like stolen money? So there is a view in Achronim that, again, earlier I already in the Rambam, that, and maybe you could find this in the Rishonim too, that that's not stolen money. Why is it not stolen money? Because it's a deal between two people. You knowingly agreed to pay $110 back for the $100. So I didn't take advantage of it. Now, parenthetically, the Gemara Bava Metzia suggests that it is akin to gezel, because the Gemara Bava Metzia has a discussion, why is it that we need a separate dinim for onah, ribbis, and gezel, suggesting that on some level it is. Yes?
Can you also have conscious thievery, though, that you, that somebody, meaning, even if it's not the case of somebody threatening you and you therefore will buy the thing from them, or you'll be mocher the thing to them, can you still have, like, or I guess in, like, colloquial usage we'll say that, like, someone's basically stealing, it's like stealing something from you because you gave them such a bad deal. So
except that the other person doesn't have to take the deal, right? So if they know, and this is like worse than, or less in a sense than, oh no, the Gemara seems to have three different levels. The Gemara says you have gezel outright, you steal something without anyone's consent whatsoever. Oh no, you overcharge, so the person is being cheated, but at least he's agreeing to the price, so it's a level below, but still a total prohibition. And ribbis, there's no hidden information at all. The person totally knows what he's getting into, and again, might be very happy about this, might be getting a great deal. And yet, it does seem to be grouped together in that Gemara with Gezel. But, nonetheless, the Machron will just get to this point, and we'll have to get into the details of the Gemara tomorrow, but this is just an important background. So, there are those who come to the conclusion that ribbis is not called Gezel in that sense. So, therefore, if there was a huge nafkamina for the subtext of our Gemara, that if I were to steal money and use that as kesef kedushin, is the kedushin good? No. What if I charged interest and I said, okay, I'm lending you $100, you've got to give me back $100 and a ring. And then that ring, I take that ring and I use that to marry a woman. Is that valid kedushin? So many thought yes, and that's surprising, right? Because if it was gezel, it wouldn't be good. But ribbis, many thought was good. Now the Chazon Ish thought this isn't conceivable. He said, the Torah is reality. How could it be that something could be awesome in our Torah and still be legitimate? It's a contradiction in terms. That's a definition of illegitimate. So this was a machlokas, how to relate to this idea. But there were those who very significantly held the opinion that you could be Makadish with ribbis, even though it involves Torah prohibitions. So here in our Gemara doesn't explicitly address that, but the Gemara says that there's something else which isn't actual ribbis, is Haramas ribbis, and there it has the same thing, Mikudesha as well as Lassos came. It's like, well, it's not a riot because we're not talking about ribbis from HaTorah, but that's some important background here. Now, also, we'll have to, I guess we're out of time, so we'll have to start with this tomorrow. But what's also necessary, which is a crucial point about ribbis and about the Kaddish B'milveh, is the difference between Halva and She'ela. So God willing, we'll begin with that, and then hopefully tomorrow get quite a bit further as far as how these two sugyas connect to each other. All right, I wish you all a wonderful Tuesday. Should be only good things. Maybe I'll see you at Memphis last week. And we'll see you guys tomorrow. Sorry?
Is it going to be a view of the this month?
Yeah, I say no, that's no place. All right, Donnie, ain't going? Oh, well.
In terms of Milvelot Sunday and Lavi Sunday,
which one is it? Tell me your name again.
Alex.
What are you doing this year?
I'm studying in college.
Which college?
University of Chicago.
Sounds like fun. All right.
I didn't question, but
I was wondering because it's a little Sunday and Lavi Sunday.
And I thought that, I mean, the